For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, so I picked this topic just because I've been thinking about it a lot lately and talking with a lot of people about it. And the result for me was that I got pretty excited about it. And that's actually my goal. I'll just tell you my goal up front. My whole goal today is to get you excited about your devotional life. And also to get you excited when you think about the other people in your life, people who surround you. What would happen in their life if they got excited about their devotional life? And I think when we start to think along these lines, it gets really exciting really quickly. And just to kind of define my terms, when I'm saying devotional life, you'll see pretty quickly I'm going to actually abandon this term and replace it with something else. But for now, when I'm talking about devotional life, what I'm just talking about is our alone time with God, which usually, you know, we're talking about studying the Bible, we're talking about a period of prayer. It's just our time that is devoted to God and I. And so that's my goal, is to get you excited about it and also to give you some practical ideas. And I know there's so much that I want to say. Every time I tried to start structuring in a lot of practical ideas, it got totally overwhelming. So instead, what I did is I made this handout, which I'll just warn you in advance. It's a total hodgepodge. It's a mess, okay? But it is a really fun mess, because here's how it came to be is we did a retreat on this topic recently, and we started asking around people, and we said, who in your home group is kind of known for having a sweet devotional life? And we got people to rat their friends out. And then we called those people up, you know, and we were like, tell us what you do in your time. And they were like, me? We're like, yeah. And so they would tell us, and what we did is we just collected a ton of ideas and put them on this page. So if you came here today because you're looking for a practical idea, try something new, I suspect you'll find a lot of good ideas on that page. But anyway, all right, so let's jump in here. So I'm assuming that all of you have at least a passing interest in this topic, because after all, you signed up for a workshop on a devotional life, unless you're here in the wrong place or you were dragged here by a friend or told to come here as a consequence or something. You know, I'm assuming that you've got an interest in this. But it's important to note that many, in my experience, many Christians do not have an interest in this. And for all kinds of different reasons. And we did, like I said, we did this retreat. It was a men's retreat. And what really amazed me was that after the retreat, I had numerous, maybe 8 or 10 different guys come up to me and say, yeah, I enjoyed the retreat, which was a surprise. I wouldn't have told you before, but I'll tell you now, I was totally dreading this topic. I did not even want to come. Why is that? Why does the word devotional life strike fear in the hearts of some people? I was pondering this. Think about people that you know. Why might someone say this sentence, or how might they complete the sentence? I'm not excited about this topic because for me, devotional life is an area of what? What's that? Okay, it's a ritual, and I'm really kind of allergic to rituals. I don't want to do that. Okay, what else? Commitment. Commitment. I mean, commitment's terrifying. I don't want to sign up for anything. If I say I'm going to do something, then I actually have to do it, and that I'm not so into that. Someone said something else. You can just shout them out. So this is an area I have failed in this area. And so that leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I've set off on this, and it's come crashing down. Who has time? I mean, I'm busy, right? Yeah, what else? Yeah, if you hate discipline. Yeah. Yeah, this is a sposda. I'm supposed to do this. And here's the things I came up with, that it's maybe it's an area of obligation, right? Honestly, that's how the word devotion got ruined for me, was that in my mind it got kind of hooked in with, like, this is this thing that I ought to do, that I don't do, that other people seem to do perfectly, and therefore there's something wrong with me. And you know, oh yeah, I forgot my devotional. I have to do the dishes and take out the trash. And oh yeah, my devotional. That's how I, when I hear the word devotional, that's how it sounds in my head. Devotional. that's not, there's nothing wrong with the word. It's me, okay? I'm the problem there. So it's an, maybe it's an obligation. Maybe it's an area of insecurity. You know, I just feel like I can't, I'm not strong in this area. It's intimidating. I'm supposed to go and sit down alone with God. You know, some of us, some of our temperaments are such that we're like, man, I would just about prefer to do anything else than go and be alone with my thoughts. And so it can be intimidating. Maybe you feel guilty. You know, this is where the failure thing comes in. I remember, I definitely had this one when I moved into a Xenos ministry house when I was 18 years old. And for those of you that don't know, that's like a college rooming house. It was a bunch of guys that were all about following God. And I will never forget the first Saturday morning, I came out of my room, and you know what everyone was, I saw this sight. It was all these guys off on their own, and they're like reading their Bible. And I remember I came out and I was like, I had two thoughts. The first one was, what? And the second one was, well, I'm not doing that. And but I felt bad about that, so I devised a strategy, which was that I would take my little Bible and my notebook, and every couple days I would move them to a new location and leave them. Now it's on the dining room table. Well, now it's on the couch, you know? As though people were looking to see. Right? That was how it was in my mind. I'm not, that's not on the work, on the handout. I'm not recommending that, okay? Maybe it's an area of cynicism where you're like, I don't think it's all it's cracked up to be. Hey, I haven't had a good devotional life in a long time. I'm doing okay. I'm not a monk, you know? This is real life. I have a job. I don't have time to do something like this. And I think these can add up to a kind of discouragement. And what I think is that in our midst, the truth is that there's a lot of secret, quiet giving up in this area. And if I'm right about that, then that would be a tremendous victory for God's enemy. Because our devotional life is our life source with God. That is where we receive all of the key provisions that we need for the Christian life. And so it would be advantageous for him, by any means necessary, to move us off that foundation any way that he can, whether it's to discourage us or make us feel guilty, or even just to plain old flatter our pride into believing that I don't need it. That would be an advantage. You remember that line from Screwtape Letters, if you've read that book? You know, the demons are plotting how to mess with the Christian, and they're lamenting how they really can't do anything to him. There are certain times where he's kind of invulnerable. It's like he has a force field around him, and it's when it says whenever they are attending to the enemy himself. In other words, whenever they're really talking to God, we can't do anything to him. We're defeated. But there are ways of preventing them from doing so. And I believe that all the things we just listed, all those antitheses we just listed, they all smack of Satan's handiwork to me. So here's my point. All of us can have a great devotional life, and if you have it, it will change your life. And if you don't have it, then you're missing out on something amazing that God has for you. And that it does not and should not be all the things on the list that we just listed. What is it really? If we think about it, what does the Bible say about the ability to sit alone with God? It says that it's a provision. It's not for God. He doesn't need you to come and have good attendance. That's not the point. It's for you. It's for you to receive from him. It's that he wants to relate with you, and he has things to give you. It's a privilege that we do not deserve. Think about this for a minute. This is the holy God. I think about, you know, this passage from Romans 5 when he's describing the benefits of salvation, the results of salvation. He says, Jesus Christ, through whom also we have obtained our introduction by faith into this grace in which we stand. That word introduction, that's the word for like an introduction to come and appear before a king. In the ancient world, you couldn't just walk into a throne room and be like, hey, I wanted to talk to you, king. They would chop your head off. Like, you can't do that, okay? You need to be invited. You need an introduction, a formal introduction to approach a king. And what is he saying here? He's saying, because of Jesus' death on the cross, we have an introduction. You have a standing invitation before the throne of God, which is amazing. That is your birthright on the cross, earned by Jesus Christ on the cross. It's a foretaste of heaven. Here on earth, sinful me in the fallen world can connect with God just like I'm going to do for all eternity. When you read the passages about the afterlife, they don't emphasize things like comfort or clouds. You know, they emphasize that we will be with him. That's the point. That's what's right about heaven. It's an invitation. He's saying, I want to spend time with you, and it's an opportunity for him to impact your life. So it's awesome, and we should value it, is my point. Let's read a couple scriptures here. And I don't want to spend too much time on these because I want to also get to another idea. But he says here, here's a famous one, John 15:4, abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Such a helpful illustration, the picture of the vine with many branches. And what's our relationship to Christ? It is a connection where good things flow from him to us. We're part of him. And what is our role in this dynamic? It's two things. It's to bear fruit, right? The branch bears fruit, which a lot of us read this and we're like, all right, off to go bear fruit then. But what's really emphasized is the abiding. Your job in this equation is to abide, and the fruit is born as a natural result, as a consequence, an outcome of our abiding. And to abide means to live, like to reside or to make your home. And so one way to think about our alone time with God is as our spiritual abode. This is your home with God. And I think it's important because it flows out of a relationship that's already there. You already are a branch. He already is the vine. It isn't how do I get close to God. You are. The question is, what is a natural response to that? It's natural for the branch to abide in the vine. What's unnatural is for it not, like what would be unnatural would be for me to have a relationship with God and never talk to him or spend any time. That would be strange. And when we abide in him, we bear fruit. And apart from him, we can do nothing. That's the role of the fruit. It's the outcome. Here's another one. Luke 10:38 says, now they were traveling along. He entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister called Mary who was seated at the Lord's feet listening to his word. So these women have shown him hospitality. Jesus is there, and Mary is sitting at his feet listening to him teach. Did with all her preparation. So they have a guest and she's getting prepared for that. And she came up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me. Yeah, what the heck, Mary? You know, Martha is doing all the work. This is reasonable, right? Are you okay with this, Jesus? But the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you're worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. It's kind of a surprising answer. He's like, actually, your sister has it right. You are so worried about so many things, he says, but only one thing is necessary. What's the lesson? It's that sitting at Jesus' feet is a spiritual priority over all the other things that feel so pressing and important. And I can, I'm not down on Martha. Like, I'm a Martha. You know what I mean? I am always worried and bothered about so many things. I have so many preparations that I'm attending to. And he's like, hey, what's more important is that you connect with me. Here's one. In Deuteronomy, in the law, when it's telling us what are the requirements for kings of Israel? What does God expect from the kings of Israel? Check this out. He says, now it shall come about that when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself a copy of this law on a scroll in the presence of the Levitical priests. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life. So the king is to write his own copy of the law in the sight of the priest. Like, make sure he does it. Watch him write it, and then he has to carry it with him all the time, and he has to read it every day. Read the law every day. Why? Isn't he busy? He's the king. Why? So that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by carefully observing all the words of this law and these statutes, that his heart may not be lifted up above his countrymen, and that he may not turn aside from the commandment to the right or to the left, so that he and his sons may continue long in his kingdom in the midst of Israel. To keep his head on straight, he's going to need to read the word every day so that he can remember who I am and who he is and who the people of Israel are, and as a hedge against the pride in his heart, and so that he stays on the path and does not veer off. This is going to be his spiritual foundation. He's going to need ballast daily, a daily reality check to stay sane, and that will be to read my word. Here's a really famous one. Matthew 6, verse 5. Jesus says, when you pray, you're not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so that they may be seen by men. Notice he assumes a regular prayer time. In Jewish culture, in their custom, there were set times a day where everyone stopped and prayed. He says, when you do that, and then he describes their prayer life. Don't be like the hypocrites. Hypocrite means actor. It's not fake. I'm not looking for a performance. It doesn't have an audience. They pray to be seen by men. That's not for you. I'm your audience. It's not something you do to appease other people. Truly, I say to you, he says, they have their reward in full, the people who put on a show of their prayer. He's like, you know, you can do that and you will get a reward in this life, which is that other people will be like, wow, they're really spiritual. But that is all you'll get. You will not get a reward for that from God, he says. Which is a bummer, because it means I'm going to get squat for all the hard work I put moving my Bible around the ministry house. So that is totally discouraging. He says, but you, when you go pray, go into your inner room and close your door and pray to your Father who is in secret. Three different ways he talks about privacy. Go into your inner room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. What a strong way to say that. And your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. And when you're praying, do not use meaningless repetition. Okay, so it's not an empty ritual. It's not a box you're supposed to check. Don't use meaningless repetition as the Gentiles do, for they suppose they'll be heard for their many words. It's not about your many words. It's not about how many prayers you said. It's not about how many pages in your devotional you read. It's not about how many hours. It's really not about quantity. It's not about your many words, so do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. I love this passage, because what did he describe? He's like, here's all these things it's not. And there's one thing that it is, which is secret. He's describing a relationship here. Not a show, not a ritual, not a performance, not a task, but like a real authentic relationship, like the kind you have with your spouse, like the kind you have with your friend. And you know, in the best relationships, there are those inside jokes, right? there's that history. There's that secret thing that is only between. And he's saying, I want to be your secret life. And that's why I like the term secret life so much better than devotional. Because a secret life, what does it say? It says this is something that private between God and I. And you say, I don't know, it sounds kind of negative. Secret life sounds like I'm hiding something. Well, consider this. I propose everyone has a secret life. The question is whether you've included God in it or not, right? And he's saying, make your secret life where you come with me. So I've got a six-year-old son, and we play this game called Secret Spy. And in Secret Spy, here's what you do. We're spies, and you know we have a base, which is the swing set usually in the backyard. And so we go out, and there's like a little tower that you climb in. And so we sit out there, and you know he gets on spy gear. And I'm like the boss, so I give him missions to do. And I'll be like, okay, so, you know, here's your mission. And he's like, I'm ready. And I'm like, sneak inside. Pass the dog. Don't wake up the dog. And he's like, okay. You know, and I say, find out what your mom is doing and come tell me. And he's like, and so he climbs down and he like runs in the house. He looks back like this. And then I get out my phone and I'm like doing email. And then he comes back, you know, 3 or 4 minutes later, he comes running back out. She's doing makeup. And I'm like, okay, good job. Like, next mission. And I'll say, now we're going to steal your sister's new sweatshirt. And he's like, oh, you know. And so he runs in there, and we actually have one. And he radios, Dad, Dad, her sweatshirt is sitting next to her on the couch, right next to her on the couch. She's watching TV. And I'm like, okay, try to steal it, you know. And I'm like checking email. Next thing I know, here he comes running out of the house, no sweatshirt. He's like, "She caught me! She caught me!" I'm like, "Okay, now we need a diversion. Tell her best friend is playing out front, and when she goes to look, grab it." He's like, and it's diabolical, I know. And then 5 minutes later, here he comes running out with a sweatshirt. And he's grinning ear to ear, and he's like, I got it, I got it. Give me another mission. And I love playing that game. And so does he. And as I was thinking about this, I was like, man, that's like the best picture of a healthy devotional life that I can imagine. It's a secret base. Only he and I know what's up. And he, like, launches out on missions for me. And I'm like, helping him, and then he comes back for more. That the rhythm of the launching out and the retreat, that's like the essence. That's what it means to walk with God, in my view. That I'm living out a rhythm where I'm starting and ending with Christ in my abode, and in the meantime I am launching out in his name, for his will, by his hand, supported by him as an instrument in his hand, and then retreating back. Like a jet fighter on an aircraft carrier. You know, think of a jet fighter. It's got a base. It's got a secret base where it has all of its needs and all of its equipment and everything and its mission, and then it launches out, accomplishes something, and returns. That's me. That's how we should be. So in that view, then, the devotional life isn't like a healthy detail that you should really try to include. It's the foundation. Jesus taught this rhythm. Here's Mark 1:32. When evening came, after the sun had set, they began bringing to him all who were ill and those who were demon-possessed, and the whole city had gathered at the door. And he healed many who were ill with various diseases and cast out many demons, and he was not permitting the demons to speak because they knew who he was. So what's Jesus doing in this passage? He is working hard. It's after the sun went down. The whole city comes out. They're bringing him everyone who's ill. He's healing them. He's holding back demons. In the early morning, While it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went away to a secluded place and was praying there. Simon and his companions searched for him, and they found him and said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." And he said, "Go away, I'm praying." No, he said, "Let us." Now, look, what he says is surprising. He says, "Let us go somewhere else, to the towns nearby, so that I may preach there also. For that is what I came for." And he went into their synagogues and throughout all Galilee, preaching and casting out demons. So what's the pattern? He works himself to exhaustion. And then he sneaks off in secret and gets with his father. He came, what did he do? He came in for a landing. Went back to his abode, and by the time they find him, he's refueled and refreshed, and he's like, "All right, next play. Where's the next town? Let's go." Now watch this. He teaches it to his disciples too. If we skip ahead to Mark chapter 6, it says he summoned the 12 and began to send them out in pairs, and he gave them authority over the unclean spirits. They went out and preached that men should repent, and they were casting out many demons and were anointing with oil many sick people and healing them. So now he sent them out, and they're doing the same work, right? This is the same tasks that he was doing. Now they're doing it. And when they come back, it says the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to them all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Get back out there and finish your work." He said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest a while. For there were many people coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. They went away in the boat to a secluded place by themselves." He's like, "Now you've worked yourself to exhaustion. Now you have to come in for a landing. Come away with me. Let's find a secluded place and rest together." So I think what I want to think about then is the effect of this pattern. If we can picture this pattern of launching out and retreating back to my abode, what would that have in like practical real life? So think about the, you know, the difficult missions that you've got in your life right now. There's probably a few, right? Maybe like a ministry endeavor. Maybe a difficult conversation that you're kind of dreading. A source of anxiety, a problem in your family or at work. But these are the hard missions that God puts in our life. And there's two ways of approaching those. You know, maybe it's like a family reunion. You know, it could be anything. You can approach that by saying, "This is going to be tough, so I'm going to grit my teeth and get it over with so I can get back to normal life." Or you can view this like a mission from which I need to launch out from Christ and then return back to Him. So I'll give you an example. I've got a friend who occasionally calls me up and wants to get lunch, an old friend. He loves to talk about spiritual things. He's not a Christian. He loves to bring up spiritual things, but not because he's curious about Christ. Because his hobby is to listen to atheist blogs and internet trolls and people who trash Christianity and load up with all kinds of curveballs and hard-to-answer questions and then find sucker Christians like me to unload them on. So when he's like, "Hey, man, we should get lunch," I'll just be honest with you. I'm always like, "Oh." But I've prayed about it, and I believe that God wants me to go, so I go. Now, I can grit my teeth and endure it. There's always a point in the conversation. He always says the same thing. At a certain point, he says, "I can't believe someone as smart as you believes in God." And, you know, I can like, tough it out, or I can do this. I can say, "All right, for an hour before I go to that lunch, I'm going to sit down with God. And we're going to make a game plan. And I'm going to get some things straight. Like, I'm going to get my identity straight before I go in there. I'm going to get what's at stake for me, which is not that much, and for him, which is a lot. Let's get that straight. I'm going to get my audience straight. He's not my audience. The people I'm going to tell about this aren't my audience. My audience is my Father who sees what is done in secret. He's going to be my audience. And when that guy says, 'I can't believe someone as smart as you believes in God,' I'm going to cast a knowing glance to heaven like, 'Yep, he said it. We knew he was going to.' And I already decided in advance that I was not going to be fazed by that. And then as soon as I'm out of there, I'm going to come right back and I'm going to talk to you, because I know that whole time that my next move is back to base where I can pray for him and where I can digest what happened. And you know what? I'm going to come back and I'm going to come back saying, I got it. Like, I got that sweatshirt because my job was to faithfully show up and love that guy, and I accomplished my mission, even if his heart is still hard as a rock. I accomplished my mission. And even if I don't, even if I blow it and I lose my temper and I yell at him in the restaurant, then I can still come back and say, she caught me, and we can make a new plan. So let's think about what would be the benefits of launching out. So there's two pieces. There's the launching out and there's the returning back. The launching out, I think, is a little bit more intuitive, you know. So why would it help me, let's say, to start my day, for example? And by the way, it's going to seem like I'm talking about morning and evening, and for many people it's that, but let me just say in case I forget, it doesn't have to be that. The point of the pattern is regularity, all right? That's the point. And that when I come out from my time with God, I know that I'm returning back. And so, but let's think about the launching out. Let's say I woke up in the morning and spent time with him before I took on the tasks of the day. How would that change my day? Well, for one thing, it orients us before God for the day, right? I'm getting the eternal perspective. I'm acknowledging that there is a God, and I'm getting myself in line with that fact, headed out the door. That's important because, and we're all deceived on this. We think, of course, I'm oriented before God all the time. No, you're not. You know, you wake up, and the truth is, if I wake up in the morning and head out the door to work, what I'm oriented around is like whatever I happen to be feeling, or like what I heard on the radio on the drive-in, or the last thing my wife said to me as I walked out the door. That becomes my orientation for the day, and then my thoughts and feelings and attitudes just like happen to me until I realize that they're wrong, and then I run to God then, which is a lot of extra work. The Bible warns us, Romans 12 warns us that one of two things is going to happen to our minds. It's either going to be transformed by the renewing of our mind, or it's going to be conformed to the world around us. And if I wake up and strike out into the world, guess what is going to happen to my mind? It's going to be conformed. It establishes our audience for the day. Most of us go around with an unconscious audience. You know, would my boss be pleased with what I'm doing right now? Would my spouse be pleased with what I'm doing? What would my friends think? This sets the dial to your Father who sees what is done in secret. And man, that detail right there can completely change your day. It turns your radio on. How much more likely are you going to be to turn to God in prayer if you just got done praying with him this morning? Right? When that problem blows up at work, it's going to be my first instinct because I was just talking to God anyway. And I think really importantly, this is where we get our orders. You know, the jet fighter takes off under orders. This is a really helpful way to think about your day. You know, if you start off by saying, okay, God, what do you have for me to do today? What scenarios am I likely to encounter and what would you have me do? What things are going to be a challenge and how have you given me a provision for those? What are my requests for the day? And this is, for me, this is the difference between a great day and a bad day. And this does not take that long. This can take 10 minutes or less to say, what are your orders for me today? And to get mentally prepared. We have, our home church Bible study meets about 5 minutes from my house. And so I walk there usually, and my habit has become that I try to walk it alone on the way there. And the reason is so that I can connect with God and say, okay, what do you have for me? Who's going to be there? What conversations could I maybe get into that would be good? And how can I get ready for those? Who needs encouraged that I'm going to see? Who should I sit by? Right? That I'm walking, and unless you're a very naturally strategic person, which maybe you are, but I'm not, and so for me that's essential. I'll give you another example. I have a friend who is chronically fighting with his wife, Their fight was always happening at the same time of day, which was right when he got home from work. Because she's been at home with the little kids all day. He comes home running on empty. She's running on empty because she's been dealing with them all day. And there's this collision of needs, right? She's ready for a break. He's ready for a break. They both feel unappreciated by the other. And it was blowing up. If you have kids, you know the fight that I'm talking about. If you don't have kids, you will someday know this fight. But this was happening every day. And I said, man, you know what you need to do is you need to get with God on the way home so that you can walk in the door with your head on straight, with your orders about how you're going to serve them. And he was like, I can't do that. There's all this traffic and I'm stressed out on the drive. And I was like, okay, so is there like a park on your way home? Yeah. So here's what you do. You get out of your car, pull over, get out, take 10 minutes, get your orders before you walk in the door. And he was like, no way, because part of the fight is that I come home too late, so she'll just be mad that I'm late. And I said, well, she might not know it, but she would rather have you 10 minutes late in the spirit than right on time in the flesh, right on time for your fight. It emboldens us for the mission. When I have a sense of like sentness that I've been deployed by God for something, how much more courage and initiative am I going to have? You know, Tommy would never steal his mom's makeup. Are you crazy? But if Dad sent him on a mission, right? He's fearless. He's intrepid because he is on a mission. And it equips us. Here is our time where we get that insight, that conviction, that reminder, that verse. That verse, I can't tell you how many times I've studied, am I ever going to use this? And then, no joke, later that week or even later that day, it's the very verse I need that is a key in a conversation I'm having, right? I know that's happening. So when you're sitting there and you're reading Zechariah and you're like, why am I doing this? You have to picture you're like a jet fighter on the tarmac and God's like strapping missiles and bombs to your wings to be deployed at a later date when he says fire. Just go with it. All right, so I think those are intuitive. Launching out, we get that. But now think about the other side of the coin. How would it change my day as I go through my day to know I'm coming right back? Like a boomerang, I'm returning right back. How would that affect my day? I think that affects things just as dramatically and gets forgotten because the hangar is the place that the fighter retreats to safety. Psalm 18:2. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. Isn't it interesting in that psalm, the psalmist only says one thing. God's my safe place. He says it like 10 different ways. My rock, my fortress, my deliverer. I'm out there getting beat up. I'm out there in the fight, but I know I'm coming back to my fortress, to my safe place, to my deliverer. One of my good friends teaches elementary school. He got moved, he got a new assignment, and he got assigned a first grade classroom in one of the toughest schools in the city, one of the lowest performing schools in the city. And he had a terrible year. And I just remember early on in the year, he was literally in tears, grown man, literally in tears. And he said, no matter what I do, I cannot win at school. I fail every day, and I've lost my... I just can't do it again. He's like, I'm so anxious. I can't fall asleep at night because I'm dreading the next day. And every day it's a disaster. He's like, I'm having to go into the bathroom at work because I'm just panicking. And that was a hard fight for him to work his way out of, but he finished the year. And you know what the big turnaround, the key for him was, he set aside two times in his day. One was evening before he went, so that he could say, here's what's going to, tomorrow it's going to go bad. And here's what my attitude is going to be. here's what I'm going to say to you when that happens. And I'm going to go and endure this bad day, and then the very next thing is right after school, I'm coming to you to talk, because, and then we can dissect what happened. And so just this idea of, like, this experience is going to be bad, but it's going to be framed by a support network. I'm coming from you, and I'm coming back to you on it. You know, it really helped him. And by the end of the year, I asked him at the end of the school year, I was like, how's your year? And he was like, pretty good. You know, now a lot of other factors played into that too. But this was the moment his attitude changed. This is what got him to sleep at night. He needed a stronghold. The cords of the wicked have encircled me, but I have not forgotten your law. But is the most important word in the Bible. I may be surrounded by everything terrible. Everything might be going wrong, but I have not forgotten your law. Your word is true, even if everything else seems upside down. Therefore, Psalm 32:6, let everyone who is godly pray to you in a time when you may be found. Surely in a flood of water, great waters, they will not reach him. You are my hiding place. You preserve me from trouble. You surround me with songs of deliverance. Once I started looking for this language about a secret life with God, I was amazed how much scripture there actually is describing our relationship with God in just this way. You are my hiding place. So I'm coming back to the deck to, what am I doing? To debrief. Okay, here's the dump, boom, of what happened today. Here's all the things I felt confused about and felt great about. And what am I going to do about this issue? Here's the place where I wrestle through. Should I do this? Should I do that? This is the time when I talk with my many counselors. Psalm 119, 24. Your testimonies also are my delight. They are my counselors. How does the word bear on the things that happened today? To nurse wounds. God, I had a terrible day. Let me tell you what it was like. Let me tell you how I feel about it, because you're listening. This is where we can lament. You need to learn how to lament. If you've never learned how to lament, it's where you express your sad feelings and then you follow that up with what you know is true and let those be in tension together. And this is a normal part of your life, it makes facing failure and pain way less scary. Boom, something blows up in your face, and your instinct becomes, I'll deal with this when I get back to base. I just got shot up. There's bullet holes in my wings. We need to get back to base. I think it really does change our experience of suffering dramatically. Because my Father, who sees what is done in secret, is waiting. He knows how I was wronged in this situation. He saw what happened. It's also where I come back to celebrate victories. It's so sweet let's say you've got a big teaching that you're going to do, or something you're anxious, you know, and you get together with God and you put that together, and then you launch out in a connected way with Him. Do you know how fun and rewarding it is then to come back? Hey, we did it. You know, here's what happened. Let's celebrate together. And it's where we come back for some R&R. The pilot's got to rest, you know? And what's really interesting is the Bible describes our resting places with Him as well. So think about, okay, like, what do you do to relax when it's been busy and crazy and hectic? What do you do? You know? What'd you say? You go to sleep. Okay, yeah, that is very restful, going to sleep. You can binge watch Netflix, too, or, you know, have a beer or eat a Blizzard from Dairy Queen. That's what I do. But anyway, and those things are, I'm not down on those things. Those things are great, and I think it's healthy to have a provision for that in your life. Just don't believe the lie that those things will refresh you. You know, someone says, man, I'm really burned out. I'm run down. I need to rest. You say, cool. And they're like, how about some nights? How about a Blizzard? How about some devotional time? You're like, ooh, yuck. That's work. You know what I mean? Like, I just told you I'm tired. All right? But here's the thing is, those other things, they won't refresh you. How do you feel after you watch 3 hours of Netflix? Feel ready for bed. ready for a second blizzard. You know, you don't feel, you're not like ready to launch out on the next mission exactly, right? What refreshes you is to come in for a landing. Check out Psalm 119:50. This is my comfort in my affliction, that your word has revived me. What revived him? Your word revived me. And the effect is that we're reinvigorated to launch out again. You come in for a landing, and it's true. You walk out of there like, all right, let's go. Next mission. Psalm 17:7. Wondrously show your loving kindness, O Savior, of those who take refuge at your right hand from those who rise up against them. Keep me as the apple of the eye. Hide me in the shadow of your wings from the wicked who despoil me, my deadly enemies who surround me. Doesn't it sound here like he's headed out, but he says, keep your eye on me, right? I'm trusting you to hide me in your wing. And that next time we can't come back in for a landing. That is, it does get addictive. Psalm 27:4, one thing that I have asked from the Lord that I shall seek. It's like I want one thing, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to meditate in his temple. For in the day of trouble, he will conceal me in his tabernacle. In the secret place of his tent, he will hide me. He will lift me up on a rock. The secret life. So here's the point. The point is, I believe this is a gigantic game changer when we have this for you and for the people in your life, in your ministry, in your relationships with other people, in your capacity to serve God, and in your vitality and longevity, spiritual longevity. My ministry is working with adults, so people ranging in range from, you know, 30 all the way up to 85 or older. And I can tell you what I have observed, the people who make it all the way, the people who are still hardcore in their 80s, which I want to be, there's like a couple factors that they always have. One is they have a few good regular hangouts with friends. Two is their life is about serving other people. And three is they have a devotion. It's a key. And for many of us, it might be the missing key for spiritual revival. So maybe you need to discover it. Maybe you've never, man, I remember where I was. One of my most important memories of my life where I was when I discovered and got excited about this for the first time. I was walking on a trail, and I was thinking about the Bible verse in Hebrews that describes us as coming before the throne of grace with confidence. And I was thinking about what that meant, and I was picturing walking before a king on a throne with confidence and what that would be like. And I was like, so that means that I could like tell you confidently what I'm really thinking, even if it's wrong. And I began to talk to God. Kind of like for the first time in my life, in that I was like, okay, here's what I'm really thinking. Gosh, I didn't even know I was thinking that till I said it out loud. And here's what I'm actually really worried about. What do you say about that? And it was like, I want to keep doing this. And I came back the next day and the day after, and I was so excited. I remember I came home and I told my roommates, I was like, guys, I had the best day. And they're like, why? And I was like, I prayed today. And they're like, and I was like, no, I prayed. I can't explain it. And I still go. That's still my spot. I still go there 3 or 4 times a week, 20 years later. And so if I see you there, pretend like you don't know me, or I'll be mad at you because you're in my spot. Maybe you need to discover it. Maybe you need to rediscover it. I told you we interviewed all these people. You know what one of the most consistent things they said was? They said, yeah, for me it really ebbs and flows. They all said, why are you interviewing me? Because I have times where it's really good and times where it's really not. No one, not one of them said, yes, I started this devotional 30 years ago and I've been doing it ever since. No one said that. It's a relationship. It's going to be a little imperfect. And don't give up just because you've gotten out of it. That's the path where we get on feeling all guilty and bad. Okay, so your devotional time fell off. That's not really a big deal. What is a big deal is what you're going to do today. You still have an invitation. You still have an introduction before the throne of grace. Maybe you need to rediscover it. Some of you have been out there bearing a lot of fruit and getting worried about your many, many preparations, and you haven't come in for a landing in as long as you can remember, and you're like on fumes. And that's the path to burnout. Don't be like Cougar in Top Gun. You know what I mean? You need to come in for a landing. All right, so last thing I'll say about this is that maybe you need a plan. And I say this with reluctance because this is a big turnoff for a lot of people. Oh, you know, I really don't want a structure to this time. What I've found is that it really helps to have a structure. Here's some things that don't matter. It doesn't matter what exactly structure you use or what exact time and place that you have. It doesn't matter if you keep it perfectly. Those don't matter. What does matter is that you have a time and place. Like, you need a swing set. And that you've chosen some kind of structure that actually works for you, that actually gets you reading the Bible and gets you talking to God, which there are myriad ways of doing that. But you have to find what you actually are going to do and actually be excited about doing. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. And the other thing that matters is that it's regular. And I will go as far as to say daily. I believe in daily. And I think that if it's not daily, you miss something. That's not to say there isn't a crazy day you miss something. But I'm saying that that knowledge that each day, and I'm not talking for hours and hours, but I'm saying that there is a time where I check in. There is an occasion where this is what I do during this time. If you don't have that, what will happen is you won't do it. Or you'll wait till things are so bad that you're like, oh my God, I need to get with God. Which is good too, but it's also too late. So you need a plan. On that handout that I gave you, it's organized by ideas about prayer that people gave, ideas about studying the word that people gave, but the first part, if you don't read those, do read the top part, because the top part is like general principles that people gave that I think are super helpful. An impression that I probably gave that I really don't want to give is that every time you go, it's going to feel all these wonderful things I described, and you're going to come out of there with a clear sense of tasks A, B, and C. Yeah, it's not like that, right? There's lots of times where, you know, I've come and talked to you every day this week, and I haven't felt like I connected with you one time, and I haven't gotten anything out of the Word, and my problem is just as big as ever. I think there is a couple components there. One is a faithful waiting on God, you know, to believe that he's not going to baby me by always attending to exactly what I want at all times. And there's going to be lots of times where I have to persevere in faith. And I've got to bank on the times where I really have seen him come through, you know, and believe that that as I keep doing this, it's going to, you know, God's going to give me what I need when I need it. And so that's important. I also think, you know, the more subjective thing of like, I just feel like you're not there. That's a whole different topic, but it's a really important one because every Christian experiences that. I think, I could be wrong, but I was looking at the titles of the different breakouts. I think Lee Campbell is doing a breakout session. What's it called? It's like when God doesn't seem there or something like that. Maybe that. I'll just punt to Lee. Lee will fix that problem of yours. He's wise for thinking about our devotional time together.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.